A62. Number 6A.
All right, we go to the next one. Principle must be truth. We have that. The principle can never err. And we come to love. Yeah, principle must be love. A very great combination that Mrs. Eddy uses. That's her favorite. That she says principle is love and love must be principle. Yes. What did she see why a principle must be love in order to be a principle? A very terrific sense. Really adapted to the 7,000 year period that is coming. Why should a principle be love in order to be a principle?
It's a purposeful principle.
It's a purposeful principle, huh? Or Rick? A universal principle, a principle that has a plan towards a high goal. That's really the point. Because in any science, I don't know if you realize that, but in any theory of science, you have the statement that a principle has no aim, no meaning, no sense, no aim. A principle is a principle without giving any value of the quality of that principle. A scientist therefore says, I don't care what they are going to do with my inventions. My job is to investigate the subject and to find the truth about it. What the other people are going to do, or the politicians are going to do, that's their business. Science itself, that is resting on principle, has no love in it, does not want to have love in it, does not want to have meaning in it, sense in it, evaluation in it. And actually, this has been one of the great fundamentals of any scientific theory, right from beginning with the discovery of scientific laws in the Renaissance, and especially with Newton. His laws had no moral in it, no ethics in it. No principle in any science has ethics in it, has an evaluation in it. It's the only thing is it true or is it not true? Is it workable or is it not workable? And it's only in our generation that question has come up. Is really a science when it's going to destroy us? Is that really a science? You know, this question only came up really with the hydrogen bomb, not even with the atom bomb. They were still trying out this atom bomb because that's the job of a physician physicist that he has to find out how an atom bomb works. So it worked. And actually, I think the very first time came when Oppenheim said, I'm no more going along with it. And they had to try out the hydrogen bomb. He said, no more. That's no more my business. And then Teller took over and said, I don't care. The job of a scientist is to find out the solution, no matter what they are going to do. But since then, this has come up in more into the discussion of the theory of science, asking, do we actually have a right concept of what the principle consists of? Is it allowed that the principle is without love? Is that a principle? Should we actually investigate the principle that is without love, that is without a high goal? See, what Dinuis said, without a telefinalistic goal, with a principle that leads on and higher and higher and higher instead of going down the drain. This is the great discussion among the theoretical scientists of today when they meet at the conventions and so on. This comes up again and again. Whereas Mrs. Eddy came and said that her principle is love. She makes love as the principle of her science. Absolutely new. It's so unique, you don't find it anywhere. So unique, you know? We are not realizing how unique Mrs. Eddy's discovery is. We haven't really realized her terrific contribution to world consciousness. We still consider her somehow as having found a new way of healing our little ailments. And how to get a bit more out of life and get a bit more supply for our daily life and so on. This is not what Mrs. Eddy discovered. Only when we go through these exercises, you know, and compare it with what the world has and see that the world also has mind, but that mind is not spirit, not soul, not principle, life, truth and love. The world has also spirit, but that spirit has no mind, no soul, no principle, life, truth and love. The world also has a soul, but it isn't mind and spirit, no principle, life, truth and love. And so, can you see that in this way we begin to touch the magnitude of Mrs. Eddy's contribution, which is a magnitude, as I said right at the beginning, of a completely new paradigm. So completely new as Jesus' contribution was. He said, the Lord, the prophets, yes, they were robbers and thieves. That was something to say, saying that's an old paradigm, the paradigm of robbers and thieves. I bring you a new paradigm, the paradigm of grace. Okay, so he brought the paradigm of grace. And comes Mrs. Eddy along and says, that old paradigm of the scientist, of the natural scientist in a scientific age, is finished. It relies on a system of reference which is no good at all. Not one thing is good about the old system of reference on which the scientists of today build. I give you a new paradigm, I give you a new science and a new basis of science. I give you the basis of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, and they blend with each other, and only that which is in agreement, which is in synchronicity with that blending of those seven synonymous terms is actually a basis on which we build a science that is love. This is terrific. This has nothing to do with healing corns and things like that. All right? We take life. God is life. Everybody says, yes, God is life, except perhaps those who don't believe in God at all, but those who believe in God, they say, oh yes, God is life. What do they mean with life? Do they mean that life is mind? What kind of a life do we have if that life is not at the same time mind? This is a great question. Yes?
Life would
have no action. Life that would have no action.
Non-creative.
Life that is not creative.
You know,
we have to be careful. You know, I come back again. I think in its first attempt, in its more fundamental attempt, we should stick somehow to the noumenon sense of a synonymous term, and not to the phenomena, not to ideas like action or creative, because the world will also say life is creative, and you can see it, huh? Those kids just pop up all over the place, and population grows, huh? See? Can you see that? They will also say life is active. Oh yes, life is active. Something has to happen. There is vitality all around. But they would not... Again, you see, they have a different sense of creativity and of activity than we have. So If we just stay with those ideas, we are just as indefinite as the others. We really have, that's the bigness of staying to that simplicity of staying with the synonymous term and perhaps their counterfeit. Life as mind is much bigger than life as action or life as creative. Because everybody somehow would accept that, that life is active. I don't think that there would be many people who would say life is not active. They would say, oh yes, that's the very nature of life, that it is acting, or creative. So it goes on and on and on and on. And what have they, sense do they have of life as creative? Well, physically creative. And they say, you can see that life is going on. They will even say life is eternal because there is creativity in life. You can see it. A plant grows and then it dies, but the seed goes on, and so the seed is creative, and therefore it goes on and on, and that through millions of years, an acorn will be an acorn, and a pine tree will be a pine tree, and it's eternally going on, or more or less eternally going on, because life is creative. So we have to be careful, because this would not be really the answer to it. Can you see that? I'm very much in sympathy what you say in one way, if you take that as a secondary elaboration. But the pith of it, we really find when we take just a synonymous term and say, yes, is their sense of life really mind? Mind? Is their sense of really a life that is conceived of the divine mind, and then no one has that sense of life in the world. No one. No one. So we get to the uniqueness, to the uniqueness of the discovery of Christian Science, to say, my word, actually only mind is life. Not physical life, corporeal life, family life is life. Only the mind, only the infinite primeval conception of mind is actually life. See, that's what Jesus actually wants to say. He says, this is life eternal, that ye will know God and Christ and so on. We could see life is mind. But life is mind. That we can have life without the body, without the brain, without anything, just mind. The one divine mind. That's life. To know that mind is life. Did I bring it out clearly? But we somehow should begin to be able to work with the synonymous term. And then we see the bigness of it. See, so often, actually, one is thinking about life. That's natural. Everybody's thinking about life, and as one goes on in years, one is thinking, what is life? What is eternal life? One jolly well has to be faced with this, because that phenomena of death is still there, and it's still approaching. Think of what one gains when one thinks that, after all, life is mind. You know? Mind alone, that divine mind, that primeval conception of mind, is life. Then one has a feeling that life is actually eternal, because it's independent, and you come to life as spirit, is absolutely independent of on physics, on matter of the flesh. That life is soul, absolutely independent, really, on the body. Has nothing to do with the body, if the body lives or doesn't live. Has nothing to do with that. It's not a question of demonstrating that the body lives or the body does not die. It is a question that life is mind. The moment you have touched that life is mind, you have touched that life is spirit. And therefore, you not even ask that question, how can we make the body live? How can material life be extended? Where did we live? Before birth? And what is after death? This does not enter. Can you see that question of of limited life, where were we before birth? Great question. Where are we after death? We will live on. These are wrong questions. They are wrong questions because we have not started to see that life is mind. Capital M. Of that mind we know that's the eternal mind, that's the divine mind. It's the mind conceiving of itself as what it is. That has never been in a body, that has never, was never born into a body, that never lived in the body, that never had to go out of the body. These are all wrong questions. These are all wrong questions because we haven't asked the very first question right. Is life mind or not? You think about it. You think about it at home for the next few years. This is answering our question, a terrific question. What is life after life? What is life before life? The questions are answered the moment we see, and we really see what Jesus said, this is life eternal, that ye shall know God. If we have mind at the beginning, all the other questions are answered. Because then we don't ask for material life, for extension of material life, for a better human, better corporeal life, because that's not life. That's anyway not life. Mind is life. Isn't it terrific? Mind is life. Not just say God is life. That we like very much. God is life. It's a religious sense of life. Oh yes, God Almighty, God dear Almighty is life. I have heard that since a few thousand years. God is life. And what's our concept? That we still have a wrong concept of a life that is going on here and so on, and say, yes, that life that is going on does not belong to the body, it belongs to God. All right, what did we gain? Nothing. A religious sense of it, that's all. But if we define life through mind, isn't it? Then you see something very different. Then that whole question which comes afterwards, what is life without spirit? Well, that is material life. All right, that is solved. The moment we have mind, because mind is spirit, we do not ask about the wrong sense of life as matter, as physique, as bodily life. Because we know that's anyway a wrong question. It doesn't enter in. So we see that life is spirit, not matter. But that life comes to soul. Life as soul, or life must be soul. Naturally we get a terrific sense that life is outside of body. Because soul is never in something. So we see that life has always been outside the body. Our struggles which we have with that concept of death, of birth and death, is always a concept that has to do with a false sense of soul. Because soul says, I'm never going into a body, and so I don't have ever to be raised out of the body. For soul, there is no material birth, and for soul, there is no resurrection necessary. We don't need resurrection if, in the first place, we haven't gone into the body. Only those people need resurrection who believe that they are in the body. They need resurrection. But soul doesn't need any resurrection. And that's what she says in the ninth chapter. In the tenth chapter, we don't need resurrection. This is an old belief. This is a religious belief starting out from a wrong sense that we are in the body. Then we somehow have to get out of that whole thing. But the point is never to get into it. And if we see that life is mind, and to mind we really attribute the quality that it is the universal mind, the world mind, limitless mind, then we have never been in the body. So we have never been life or spirit, says, therefore you never had a material life. You were never, life was never born in matter. Therefore, in soul, therefore, life has never to be resurrected out of matter. Life is always unchangeable as soul, immortal as soul, does not need resurrection from body. Yeah? Is that clear? Isn't it terrific when you consider? It's for me. Oh, it's terrific. You know, it's so simple, these exercises. Nobody can say it's difficult. You take seven synonymous terms and just see how they blend with each other. But the impact of it is quite enormous. It sets the whole world aright. The whole world sets aright. There's nothing in the world as a question that would not be set aright through this blending. What would be life without principle? Would have personal lives, yeah? Alright. Life would be something that belongs to things and people, so that plants and animals and birds and people have their own lives, yes? How is it with truth? Life without truth. What you feel would be, what kind of life would we have without this life where truth? For instance, unconscious, that's quite nice. We would see that life, we could live life unconsciously. Do people live life unconsciously? Yes, that's it, Especially if we consider under consciousness the divine consciousness. Then we can really see, yes, that's the trouble. That there is a life being lived without divine consciousness. And that's where things go wrong. Whereas if we would see, there is only one life with a capital L, and that capital L life is truth, is conscious of its own divinity. And therefore is only living its own divinity because it's conscious of itself. So that life is living its divinity. And therefore we don't need really to live a true life. Life as truth, a true life. That would be a religious sense or a metaphysical sense where we would try to live that which is true without knowing what true is and without knowing what life is. Whereas if we go out from science, you see, science is always when you go out from the infinite and from the infinite deduced to the idea, we suddenly feel, being, life, is constantly conscious of itself. Therefore is constantly conscious of its own existence, life. Is constantly conscious of its own eternal unfoldment, eternal development, and so lives life. We don't have to live life. We couldn't. Because the we is the counterfeit of principle. The moment I say we have to live the truth, we have introduced the we, which is a personal pronoun, which is the counterfeit of principle. The moment we introduce something which is the counterfeit of the system, we are on the wrong basis. Whereas if we go out from science, then we let life be our consciousness. And then we let life demonstrate the truth. And that's then science. What is life if it would not be love, life would be unfulfilled. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Using that word.
Please.
Incomplete.
Would be incomplete, unfulfilled. Yes.
Uncompensated.
Not would have no compensation. Uncompensated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would be fearful in hell.
Would be hell, huh? A hell of a life, huh? Mm-hmm. Yes. Would have a hell of a life, which most people have. Yes. Don't they? I feel most people have a hell of a life. Yeah. But if we would really understand life, we would see the true sense of life which we have built up naturally. That life which is reflecting mind, and which is reflecting spirit, which is only spiritual life, which is reflecting soul, which is never in body, which is reflecting principle and therefore has nothing to do with a person, which is reflecting truth, which is always doing the right thing. Then we really would have a life that is love, life that has only one great plan of fulfillment. I would see that life has within itself the ability, the program, it would be programmed towards fulfillment. And life is programmed towards success, towards achievement, if we see that. And we wouldn't have to try to demonstrate achievement and success. Life would demonstrate it for us and to us, so that we are the achievement itself. Can you somehow feel the turning from metaphysical treatment to the science consciousness? Do you get that? Instead of working up to a solution, you work from the solution. You work from reality, and in reality there is nothing else going on but reality. And all what we do is to set ourselves straight so that we have a perfect concept of the seven, and that is the reality of being. And as that includes the principle, it works for us. You don't have to work it out. So it begins to work for us. I don't see why I should work for God. Why should I work for God? How can I? Do I have in me something that is bigger than God Himself? I don't. I don't have anything with me that could be bigger and help dear God Almighty to work. I don't have anything in me. So why should we work for God? Let's see that the divine principle works for itself. And that's good enough for me. That it works out its completeness. Can you now see the difference of practice? Of the attitude of practice? Yeah? Okay. So we finish here.